WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Kelly takes great pleasure in presenting the First Lady of Song, Miss Ella Fitzgerald.
Thank you.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset.
Thank you, Daddy.
If you want to act crazy and act the clown, be the laughing stock all over town.
Mr. Kelly's in the Gold Coast was the place to be in the 1950s and 60s for music and comedy. Ella Fitzgerald, Barbara Streisand, Sarah Vaughan, they all played there, as did comedians like Mort Saul, Richard Pryor, and Dick Gregory. At the time, Rush Street was known as the Las Vegas of the Midwest, and Mr. Kelly's was at the center of the action. The nightclub was a place where black and white artists and audiences came together, and it helped launch careers and both stand-up and political comedy. This history is showcased in an exhibition at the Newberry Library. I sat down with Andrew Merriweather, who covered the story for WBEZ. David Marienthal produced the documentary Live at Mr. Kelly's. And from the Newberry Library, we spoke with Vince Firpo, VP of Public Engagement. Andrew starts with why he wanted to find out more about Mr. Kelly's in the first place.
Well, sadly, I could not go to Mr. Kelly's when it was open in the 1950s and 60s and into the early 70s. But, you know, I found out about this exhibition, and then Cassie Walker-Burke reached out from WBEZ and said, hey, do you want to cover this? And I was like, yes, I absolutely
right.
do. And I think there was two things that really jumped out to me when I was starting to dig into this story. The first was it painted this really romantic picture of the Gold Coast in the 1950s and 60s. You know, I've been in Chicago for a little over 8 years. I can probably count on my two hands the number of times that I was like, let's go out in the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
No slander to the Gold Coast. It's just not the first place that I think of.
Yeah.
And so when I heard about this club that like was just chock full of celebrities, whether it was comedians, musicians, just like the who's who of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on this strip that was full of all these cool clubs. I was like, I need to know more about this. And the other thing that I found really interesting was just the impact that it had on stand-up comedy. You know, I think of Improv Olympic, I think of Second City.
Right.
But I had never heard of this club and the impact that it had had on stand-up
on
specifically.
On really starting it off. How did you know, Vince, that you wanted to feature this history at Newberry?
Yeah, so we received a collection from David. He amassed a number of items when he was working on his documentary, and they came to the Newberry, and it was a really easy decision for us to turn this into an exhibition. Anytime we can tell a Chicago story, mm-hmm. we're really excited about that. And this is just a great, joyous Chicago story. It's music, it's comedy, it's food. We
and
all
it's
like
your neighborhood
food.
Story too.
It's
right?
our neighborhood. It's 3 blocks away from the Newberry. And there are many people who are still living in Chicago who remember Mr. Kelly's, who are coming to the library to add their chapter to this story. So it's just a really great opportunity to highlight this club.
And David, your father, George, and your uncle, Oscar, are the ones who started the club. What was it like for you growing up around it?
Well, my father and uncle were local celebrities. And back then, local celebrities were a big deal. So I certainly relished in going to the clubs, meeting the entertainers, and actually especially meeting all the staff that came in all different races and ethnicities, and all the way from the dishwashers to the bakers to the bookkeepers and managers.
Yeah. And as Andrew brought up, David, Mr. Kelly's put comedians and musicians on the map. Why? Why was that their mission?
Well, I think George and Oscar were looking for cutting-edge talent. Of course, they were businessmen. They wanted to bring people into the club. And I think they, you know, they did see an opening with the new comics like Mort Saul, like Dick Gregory, that were doing a new style of political comedy that really hadn't been done before. Before that, it was all about your mother-in-law or your wife in the kitchen and or your husband, dirty socks. And, you know, it was not, you know, it was not involved with current events and really educating people while you were entertaining them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see this every day and we kind of accept it on late night TV. But at that point, it was something new and different and was bringing people into the clubs.
Let's hear a little bit of that. Andrew, you looked into how that political comedy flourished at the club. So let's listen to comedian Mort Saul incorporating the 1960 presidential election between Richard Nixon and John F. Kennedy into his bit.
As you know, Nixon was on Meet the Press on yesterday, and Governor Rockefeller was on Face the Nation, and Senator Kennedy was on College News Conference, because they like to talk their problems over with someone their own age, right?
What struck you about this, Andrew?
Well, one thing was that it's just so funny to hear something from like the 1960s and it to be talking about the same exact topic that we're talking about, but in an inverted way today, right? Everyone's been talking about the age of the two presidential candidates in the 2024 election, but then to hear like people thinking someone's too young was just like very funny. So I enjoyed
it. It's actually quite hilarious.
Yeah.
Performers at Mr. Kelly's didn't shy away from talking about race either. In fact, it was one of the few clubs where black and white performers shared the stage and the audience. Let's listen to Dick Gregory.
We have a lot of racial prejudice up north, but we're so clever with it. Take my hometown, Chicago. I mean, you can't see it just going in there. When the Negroes in Chicago move into one large area and it looked like we might control the votes, they don't say anything to us. They have a slum clearance. You do the same thing on the West Coast, but you call it freeways.
Ebony's Vacation Guide listed venues that were friendly to black patrons, and only two in Illinois were listed: London House and Mr. Kelly's. And I know, David, you've been doing a lot of talks and Q&As for your documentary about the club, and you've heard how this level of inclusion really did make an impact on folks. Tell us more about what you heard.
Well, we premiered the documentary at the Siskel Center for four screenings with Q&A with great entertainers and journalists before it went available online. I guess what really impressed me was the personal response. I mean, this was 50 years or more since Kelly's had closed, and we had people, particularly African-American people, stand up and say to me, I just want to thank your father and uncle for creating a place where we felt welcome on the North Side, and where we could go with our families to celebrate an engagement, going to prom. And, you know, it was so heartfelt. I mean, I really had no idea.
Vince, what are your thoughts on that piece of the club's history?
Yeah, you know, as we were thinking about curating the exhibition and pulling out these themes, that one really stood out to us as being very important. When you mentioned the Ebony magazine, there were only two spots in the entire state of Illinois.
Which is wild.
Which is wild. And they were both owned by the Marienthals. And one of them is Mr. Kelly's. It was in the Newberry's neighborhood. I think that's really phenomenal. And it says a lot about, hopefully, the neighborhood, but also the Marienthals and what they were trying to accomplish with this club.
Andrew, this also extended into making sure that women were in the limelight, too, right? Arlene Rothberg, who was a booking agent at Mr. Kelly's. I mean, she booked a female piano player and female comics like Joan Rivers. Right. Talk more about that.
That's right. Yeah. So Arlene actually started as the assistant to Oscar Marienthal. And then when Oscar passed, she took over the booking duties, which is like the most important job, arguably, in the club. Right.
Yeah.
So that's just, I mean, so progressive for that time to put women in leadership positions, not to mention having folks like Lily Tomlin performing and doing, you know, political comedy and giving them an opportunity to, you know, host their own programming.
Mm-hmm.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
Talk more about your father and uncle, David. I mean, they actually paid performers. Is that right?
Yes, and I think you can appreciate the image of an impresario, a nightclub owner at that time was not too favorable. This was people that, you know, ran out on their performers and bounced checks and canceled dates, you know, and I think it, you know, I'm not sure how much has changed, but the performers and the entertainers were really looked at as, you know, as commodities by a lot of people. And George and Oscar just really, really treated them as, you know, as the great talents they were and the wonderful, generous people they were. Ella Fitzgerald's birthday is this week. And George and Oscar gave her numerous appearances and recording at Mr. Kelly's, gave her a diamond heart-shaped necklace.
Wow.
Which she wore in many recordings, appearances. It was on the cover of an album, and they just become very, very close with these entertainers personally, as well as professionally. And I think the big thing, as you mentioned, is they did pay them a living wage. And we had Ben Stiller's father mentioned that this was the first time that he and Ann Mara were making enough where they could support a family and or think about having a family. Shelley Berman, you know, mentioned again to his wife, who we have on the film, you know, this was, you know, he called her in New York and said, "I'm finally making a living now that I'm at Mr. Kelly's."
Wow. Yeah. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around all of that. Like, I mean, that's groundbreaking stuff, Vince. And I gather that you and the exhibit curator were thinking about all of this, you know, as you're trying to figure out how to tell this story in an exhibition.
Absolutely. You know, it's easy to go down the route of this is a nightclub and it's fun and there's music and comedy.
It was changing lives.
But it was changing lives, and it was reacting to social movements of the time. It was on the cutting edge of having comedians reflect on those social movements and talk about them on stage while also being fun and a place where you could hear music. So we really wanted this exhibition to bring both of those worlds together, to remind you of a great night out in Chicago in the 50s and 60s, but also help you understand why Mr. Kelly's was important and was really cutting edge at the time.
So I'd love to hear from you all on this. I'm going to go around and try to find out everyone's favorite piece of ephemera. what collectibles? I'll start with you, Vince.
Sure. So as I was walking through, I settled on, there's a menu we have from 1973. It's a menu from the club.
A menu.
And that may not seem like the most exciting choice, but a couple of things struck me. One, just the prices are astounding to look at today. So in 1973, steak dinner with all the sides was $8.95.
Nice.
So you can't do that anymore. But I think the menu is also just a nice reminder that this was a place where people gathered, that Chicagoans went there and had dinner and had their proms and birthday parties. And yes, it was about the performers, but it was also about the people that gathered. And I think that's a nice thing to remember.
That's a nice, so you can't even get those sides for
$8.95. No, not at all. Nope.
Andrew, what about you?
Oh man, there's so many great pieces. I would say one of my favorites is a picture of George Carlin, but it's a very young George Carlin. And he's like in a suit, and he's got like his hair slicked back, right? And like the George Carlin I knew when I was growing up was like ponytail, yes. like t-shirt, like very like, casual.
Suit?
Yes. So this was before his sort of like more radical turn. So I just think it's kind of a fun yeah. snapshot of these comedians as they're making their way and becoming who they're going to be.
That's a good one. What about you, David?
You know, I'm not really good at favorites, and there's so many great things in the exhibit. I guess one of them is a 6-foot-tall painting that was done by Ellen Lanyon, who's a well-known Chicago artist mm-hmm. at the Institute. And when Kelly's was rebuilt in 1966 after a fire, she created this nightclub scene for the interior of the club. And it's a big, flowing, kind of surrealistic, abstract painting that features Lainey Kazan doing a jazz number. And then in one corner, there's a small portrait of my father and mother in the corner, and then another of the jazz trio, another of a plate and the food. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful piece of art that, you know, really is mid-century. And the Newbery took it on themselves to have this restored
nice.
and displayed in its original condition. And it's just gorgeous.
That's awesome. So before I let you all go, Vince, admission's free,
admission
right?
is free, absolutely.
When can people stop by and see all of this awesome history?
Yeah, so the exhibition is open Tuesday through Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Admission is free, and the exhibition will be up through July 20th.
We've been talking with Vince Verpo, who's a VP of Public Engagement at the Newbery Library, Andrew Merriweather, who's a journalist and audio producer, and David Marienthal, who produced the documentary Live at Mr. Kelly's. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about the interesting stories and history in Chicago, make sure to subscribe and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.